excited about the budget.
Yeah, a little
excited.
You were giving
yourself exactly.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and call the meeting to order.
It's sitting right there.
9:15 a.m.
Yeah, you need to put that in your portfolio.
November 11, 2025. The Port Commission is a port of Houston authority. We are opening the meeting. So to start with, I just want to recognize that today's Veterans Day. So
yes.
Happy Veterans Day. Veterans.
Thank you.
We know that a number of port staff are veterans. I want to thank them and all the members of our military for their service. Thank you so much. I also want to highlight an event that Port Houston hosted last week because it really speaks to what we're doing to help prepare the future maritime workforce and ensure that there's a strong pipeline to our maritime careers. This past Friday, Port Houston hosted the annual Middle School Maritime Field Day, working with our partners at the Houston Pilot and Center College, Port Houston, in the Maritime Education and the U.S. Coast Guard Auxiliary. Total of 280 students representing 16 middle schools from six area school districts participated. The event was created to reach students before they select their high school career technical education or CTE endorsements, helping them explore career pathways in Houston, in one of Houston's most vital industries. This is the second year we have held this event. At the event, students rotated through six interactive activity stations, including virtual and augmented reality demonstrations, firefighting, aquatic safety exercises, and tours aboard the Texas A&M Galveston's Trident and Port Houston's MV Sam Houston. Teachers and students also learned about high school and college programs that prepare students for careers in maritime logistics and supply chain fields. This is one of the many outreach activities we do to expose young people to maritime careers, and it was a definite success this year. Thank you for the team for all the hard work. It's really amazing when you think about marketing to middle school kids about the benefits of a career in the maritime industry, which we all know it's an amazing opportunity. But a lot of the marketing has to be to the kids, but also to the parents, right, to make sure they understand. And in fact, there are great opportunities here.
I think Clyde was a deckhand in junior high
school. Is that right? Is that how you cover through
this ass constitution?
I wish they would have a program when I was in the seventh grade. Yeah. Today's Port Commission meeting is primarily focused on our 2026 budget, so I'm looking forward to that presentation. And I know most you are too, right? You
like it. It's the evilest of necessaries.
Yeah. You're talking coming in that Commissioner Don Carlos is talking about how he just loves budgets. Mm. And I said, well, I like budgets better than audits. Well, you have to have a budget because you need to know where you're going. If you don't measure where you're going, you will never know where you've been. So, okay, well, with that said, let's go ahead and go to staff reports.
Thank you. Chairman mentioned Middle School Maritime Expo and the development of future workforce. And I just tell you, I went there. A number of our leadership went to support our staff and our partners there. And I can't explain how cool of an event it was. The kids were so engaged in all the physical and the visual displays. They're at a different level than older kids in high school and college. And I mean, the joy and the excitement they had of going to all the stations was really, really cool. So Maria and her team, you guys crushed it. Great job. And I was really impressed on how connected it was. But anyway, last week we also hosted our third annual Houston International Maritime Conference. It's about bringing together industry professionals for networking and thought leadership. Fourth. We again had a record number of attendees and guests. It was over 700. And the conference really featured an impressive lineup of speakers, including Captain Richard Phillips, who joined Eric, our COO, Casey for Fireside Chat, about his experience being held hostage by pirates. And it was amazing how captivated the audience was just to hear that at the break in the middle of a very, very intense conference. We also had the CEO of the Panama Canal Authority speak about what their plans are. And then we honored Jim Teague of Enterprise Products for their many contributions to the maritime industry. And that list goes on, including the heads of, I think, three or four of our major customers were in town, the USS, speaking to the group and connecting and really working to grow the maritime economy. This conference really supports Port Houston's role as a leader in maritime commerce and strengthens relationships with our industry stakeholders and our global partners. And to John and Eric Casey and Christine and the many, many volunteers we had that participated, thank you. It was a huge success, and I really applaud all of you for your team and for the hard work bringing it all together. Our last Port Commission was just two short weeks ago, and we reported at that time the decision has not yet been made about the placement of dredge material for future portions of Project 11. Primarily from Sims Bayou up to the Turning Basin. It is important to note that these segments of the project are not expected to be fully designed and advertised for construction until 2027. Once the options are fully vetted, the Port Authority will be involved in the final decision-making process with the Corps and is committed to full transparency and meeting with the surrounding communities and their elected officials. Further, the Port Authority is committed to making the right decisions for the public and project in full compliance with all state and federal guidelines. Now, one just important side note, I've heard many times about putting it in the bay. That isn't the other plan. I think it's just a misunderstanding. It's putting it offshore out in what's called the offshore disposal area, ODMDF. We have gotten a number of calls concerned we're not putting it in the bay. And it's just a bit of confusion of where the material would go. So that's just the clarification. But again, I'll just reiterate, the Port Authority is committed to making the right decision for the public and project in full compliance with all state and federal laws. We have some time going through a lot of due diligence so that all things are considered in the best decision. Now, Ryan will be giving you an update later on about cargo volumes in October. I'll share a very brief sneak peek. They were very strong. Again, the economy in Houston is rocking along, and our business is serving that. So our team continues to deliver excellent terminals, and I think that goes in the volume. So, sir, that's the end of my remarks. It's been a good and interesting beginning to or ending towards the year. We're getting there.
Commissioners, any questions or comments? I have a couple of comments. Go ahead. Just to report that it was a very successful trade mission. We attended, I attended to Taipei, went to Tokyo on top of the port, and the county and the airport and Houston Burst. It was really very well received. The PowerPoints, Charlie, that you all put together, you and John Mosley, were awesome. I think it was the best presentation of the whole group, and so we got a lot of accolades. So thank you for all that good work. It made the port look good. We went to a lot of the manufacturing industry, and I tell you, Foxconn has so many big plans for this area. Talk about cargo volumes going up. It's going to be incredible. It's going to happen in the next 5 or 10 years. And then the other item to report was a town hall that we were invited to that I spoke at. And again, thank you, Charlie. And I think Christine put together a wonderful PowerPoint. Thank you, Christine. And Garrett Berg showed up and, you know, suffered through the whole thing with me. It was a good program. And so we answered the community questions. And I had to go to another event with you all at the Buffalo Bayou Partnership that we were at. But Garrett stayed through the whole thing and answered questions. So if he's here, thank you, Garrett, for doing that. So we were well represented by your team. So thank you, Charlie.
Thank you. Anybody else?
Okay. Let's move on.
Oh, and Maria here. It's here. Thank you, Maria, for helping with helping those projects.
Okay, great. Let's go to appearances. We have several people that have signed up to speak. We have Megan Riley with the Earth Justice Gulf Office. Megan.
Good morning. As the chair said, I'm Megan Riley. I'm with the Earth Justice Gulf Regional Office, and I'm here on behalf of Public Citizen. And I actually am looking forward to your budget discussions as well. And I appreciate the chairperson's comment that budget sets a future tone for the port. So I want to comment specifically on the port's five-year investment plan, just a little bit about the operating budget. The plan and budget include investments that directly impact air pollution and, of course, by extension, then community health. The plan and budget include line items on investments on equipment and fuel, and the types of equipment and fuel that the port invests in will determine how much more pollution finds its way into our communities. With that, we do urge the port to make investments in zero emissions equipment, specifically electric equipment, including infrastructure to support this equipment and its fleet so that it can reach zero emissions and that minimizes pollution and will improve air for communities. And the benefit to that is grid-based electricity costs less than fuel such as diesel, and so in the long run, this has potential to reduce costs. We recognize these are difficult decisions for the port, but these decisions are critical for the future of the communities that surround the port. And I remind you of the commitments the port has made in its clean air strategy plan, as well as its carbon neutral by 2050 plan. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up is Julian Hernandez, Air Alliance Houston. Welcome.
Hello. Good morning, commissioners, and happy Veterans Day. I am here on behalf of Air Alliance Houston, Public Citizen, and the East End Empowerment Council. Today I'm speaking on behalf of these groups because of the port strategic plan, as it lists all of these groups as partners or engaged stakeholders. But after reviewing it, we don't feel like engaged stakeholders because our priorities have not been listed on the plan. Specifically, the Clean Air Strategy Plan, the Goods Movement Emissions Inventory, the E2SG Plan, the Clean Ports Program, and Project 11. And also, I appreciate the update on the Project 11 decisions that you gave this morning, Mr. Charlie, CEO Charlie. We are stakeholders because we have a stake in the process as we and our surrounding communities live and work in this area. And when we see a plan that doesn't discuss air pollution, electrification, or dumping toxic dredge material in our communities, we believe that our stake is being ignored. We have worked really hard to be engaged stakeholders throughout this process, and we are looking forward to the future where maybe our state can be considered more explicitly in the strategic update plan, as with our priorities being listed. And thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next up is Terrence Bankston, from Friends of the Earth. I have your own name, is that correct? Terrence, are you out there? And maybe we'll find him later. I know we have a next person up then would be Kiva Fink Fort, which is online as well. Do that as well.
Hello, good morning. Can you hear me?
Good morning. Yes, we can hear you. Go ahead.
Good morning, everyone, and happy Veterans Day. Once again, I'm here as a member of the port community, urging the Port of Houston to commit to genuine transparency. Our community deserves to know clearly and plainly how your projects will affect us, both now and in the future. When we ask for information, we consistently receive reports that simply list completed activities and provide technical maps that most of us cannot decipher. This is not transparency. It does not answer our fundamental questions. How does Project 11 impact the environment in our neighborhoods? Where are the updates on emissions, on air and water quality, on the safety of the dredge materials? These are the true concerns of the people living near the port. Most troubling, there remains no meaningful disclosure on how Project 11 and the ongoing port expansion affect our community's environment. We have no updates on pollution. We have no plain language explanations about the Army Corps' role, about dredge material toxicity, or whether Project 11 will be completed without dumping hazardous material in our own backyards. When we try to raise these issues, your response is to claim our information is incomplete or inaccurate. If our understanding is limited, it is because you have failed to communicate openly. Your community engagement so far has been deeply insufficient. We are not asking for free pizza or for input on basketball courts and new parks in place of answers. If you are attending our meetings, make the time useful for us and for you by providing clear, honest, and accessible data on emissions and environmental impacts. Give us information we can truly understand instead of technical jargon or evasive emails sent just to check a box. Respect cannot be demonstrated by merely holding meetings. Respect is shown by answering the questions that matter to us, by honoring our rights and addressing our concerns directly. Today's agenda includes a feasibility study for Project 12, the next major ship channel improvement project. Yet as community members, we remain in the dark about Project 11. The Port Authority's portion may be finished, but we have no information about pollution, toxicity, or the Army Corps' plans and their consequences for us. There is still time to make this process right for Project 11 and for Project 12. Please do not repeat the mistakes of the past. Do better. Provide genuine, understandable updates. Respect the communities whose lives are most affected by your decisions. And when Mr. Roland Garcia just spoke, he said he went to a community meeting and, quote, suffered through the whole thing. And that kind of just gives us, you know, information about how you truly feel. Thank you for your time.
Actually, I thought it was enjoyable. Thank you. Okay, that concludes our public comment. Okay, let's make sure we... Did Mr. Bankston come in? No? Okay. All right. Okay, well, let's go then forward. Item E, strategy, staff report, Candace. No? Good morning.
I'm cherishing the opportunity to go first.
Yeah.
This doesn't happen. I'm usually at the end.
Make it worth it.
Yes. No pressure. No pressure. Pam, I'm going to take up all the time and, okay, got you.
Perfect.
I absolutely don't have these out. These I'm going to reference. In your packets, we're getting turned out right now, but the strategic plan, I'm here to talk about the revisions we've made to our 2025 strategic plan. So this time last year, we were approving the 2025 strategic plan. It included a new mission, a new vision, new goals, new objectives. This is a five-year update to our corporate strategic plan that is required by the Texas Special District Local Laws Code. It's also a reasonable time to refresh things anyway. So we refreshed it for 2025, and here I am at the end of 2025 asking for a small revision. So we're referring to it as revision 1.0, and this is to better align with our execution efforts due to some changes that have been made in our organization and in the market, the changing market. So we're going to get you the packet, and then we'll talk about those. But the question comes in why. Why are we here asking for revision 1.0? So just simply that there are new challenges, new opportunities. There's including new executive leadership, there's organizational structure, and there are new market changes that we need to adapt to. So what items did we change? Last month, I presented with you the changes that we were recommending. Some of those changes included things like a broader definition of sustainability, sharper definitions of the goals and objectives, and a strong emphasis on jobs, regional leadership, and industry partnerships. Those are some of the themes that we've taken from the feedback of external stakeholders as well as staff. The finance team has been along the way in our update journey to to ensure that we're able to align our budget priorities with the corporate direction. You'll have to hear from Tim in a bit, but we have been in step with each other along the budget planning process. The page I just passed out is the 2022 proposed target. These are the priorities that executive leadership and the team are recommending moving forward with in 2026. I bring these to you as a sneak peek, as a preview. In December, I will ask you for your approval of these targets, but for now, this is your inside scoop. I'm happy to go through and answer any questions. I apologize not having the packet available to you. If there are any things, I have one with me, we can go through it. But yeah, open it to you guys for any questions.
Commissioners, any questions?
Just a quick comment for context. There are hundreds of organizational targets the team is working on across all of the groups to get better, to meet our purpose, creating jobs the right way. And they all distill up into the 11 that are in front of you, recommended by the senior leadership team, and going through all of those. There are many, many goals underneath within the departments and divisions that target specific areas. For example, I heard about the environment today. Those are in those plans for those groups for their targets and metrics. The challenge really is when you roll up hundreds, how do you get them clearly codified up front where everybody sees theirs there? Because everybody wants theirs in the primary goal, and they're all in the plan. So this is the high level of strategy. And Jeff, if I said this in a way you're comfortable with, anything you'd like to add or comment?
No, we have very detailed activities that align with each of these to know what exactly we want to achieve next year, and he's exactly right.
Thank you for that. You're exactly right, Charlie. There are many, many activities that are measurable and that we can hold each other accountable for in 2026.
Hearing the motion to approve the amendment. Any other questions or comments? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Okay, next up.
Thank you.
Finley.
Good morning.
Morning.
Thank you for your time this morning. Kelly, do you want to give me the helm?
Sure.
Thank you.
I appreciate the nautical comments. Careful of the dredging issues and the going.
Be the good pilot.
All right. Let me hear. Are you guys all have a handout as well and let us material? As compared to what was sent to you electronically, no number changes, cosmetics, some hair changes, if you will. I'm trying to get that very long screen for the audience. And welcome to the staff and our guests as well. We are pleased to present the 2026 operating budget. As I go through, please stop me if any questions. I respond to Hay or Tim or stop. And just happy to do so. Page two, just a couple of housekeeping things. Second bullet, a reminder that the operating budget has no Harris County property tax receipts, and if those monies are used exclusively to support the geo-bonded debt service on an annual basis. A reminder that while we approval for capital and in total, in this case, $569 million for next year, we'll bring to this table both operating and capital projects greater than $100,000 for commission work. So you're approving an overall number in which we operate within, and then we bring forward for your approval throughout the year. Third bullet, when I compare to 2025 in general, it's 3 months of, 9 months of actual through September plus the original budget for the October, November, December cycle. We didn't do a mid-year forecast because resources were totally overconsumed with next generation ERP. Slide three gives us the general view of what we'll talk about today, from the narrative, cargo income statements, some detail on revenue expense, headcount, capital, underlying liquidity, and then a review of the five-year plan. So we'll start with a few words to ease into this before we get to the numbers. Each of these bullets is covered in some detail on the following slides. Revenue projected for 2026 of $726 million, just under 5% at 4.8%. Cash generation flat to up slightly. We're up about $1 million to just under $339 million projected for 2026. As you'll remember, literally half of our expense portfolio is composed of people-related costs, both port employees and our ILA partners. Salaries and benefits in that regard are up. Headcount growth, we'll talk about the continuation of our performance-based merit program in 2026, as well as the short-term incentive program, and the budget comprehends the contracted increases in our labor rates as well. Other spending, which Candace mentioned, focused in 2026 on those strategic initiatives and really those things that are going to drive long-term returns to the communities we serve, as well as our customers and related to job growth and sustaining that. PHA Capital Awards, that's the operating capital, just over $534 million. And then Project 11 Awards at $35 million. And we'll talk about that a bit more in next few slides. Liquidity outlay outlook shows sufficient cash position to fund this five-year plan. It's just over $2 billion in the five-year plan. And for your awareness, as we get into the next container tunnel project 12, we do see the need for external financing support within 7 years or more down the road. From a cargo perspective, left side container terminal units, you see the footnote there, overall growth of 2.5% expected for 2026. In the footnotes, we separate that between import and export loads. Export loads, as I mentioned, they're growing about 2.5%. Import loads just below that at 1.8. That mimics what we're seeing here through sort of this part of 2025 in terms of imports, as we know, are somewhat lagging given the interest in tariffs and all those things. Export loads very strong, still continuing through October. And Ryan can tell us a bit more about units coming up. The TU mentioned a separate definition. The TU mentioned an industry, a shipping term, marketing term, if you will, TEUs, going from about 4.2 million to 4.4 million in 2026. Steel, a very visible commodity out the window occasionally. Modest growth next year, largely driven by coils and slabs associated with the Texas manufacturing outlook, which is actually quite strong near term and midterm next year. So that's driving some growth in the steel tonnage. Dry bulk tonnage, as titled, bulk cement, south side, it includes export grains from the grain elevator, et cetera. Both commodities and lessees indicating a good market for that in 2026. The right hand, then, other general cargoes, again, general project cargoes, aluminum bag, cement, wood products, which have done quite well this year, actually just here at Northside. So seeing that continue to be strong into 2026. Okay. Let me clean up my screen very quickly. Without impacting anyone, hopefully. All right, thank you. Page 10, an overview of the income statement. We'll start in the middle, which is an outlook for the 2025. You see we expect revenue growth of just right around 9% to $693 million this year. Financial through October, quite strong at $579 million, growing about 10% year over year. with good, healthy cash generation as well. So a solid P&L performance for 2025. Looking to 2026, you see the $726 million I mentioned previously, growing at 5%. The next circle to the right, the $339 million of operating cash we expect to generate in 2026, just a pinch, 0.3 percentage points growth. A reminder, as you know, all of that cash we generate is returned into both the ship channel and to our own capacity growth for our customers and jobs and. So that's an overview of the P&L. If you go to page 11, we get into the gore details on the numbers. I will mercifully not take you through all of these numbers, but if you'll focus in the box on the right, which compares the expected landing for 25 to what we're proposing for 26. Again, you see revenue growth of just over $33 million, up 5% the coming year. Gross margin rates, which are very important, you see the decline there by 1.7 percentage points driven almost entirely by depreciation. You know, the commission has awarded a number of capacity growth projects at the container terminals last year or so. That's Wharf 7 coming online, as well as Wharf 4 and 5 at Barber's Cut, hosted cranes, et cetera. So you see the cash flow through there just above that. Cash flow through from margin perspective, a positive $2 million. Dropping down to general administrative, which we'll go through in some detail in a minute, going from $72 million up to $90 million in 2026. Again, that speaks to the investments in strategic initiatives and those longer-term returns that we see. And then net operating cash flow, we talked about growing just over $1 million, 0.3%. The last circle on the page on the right just shows the decline and non-operating items. In this case, it's interest income associated with short-term markets and cash balances expected to decline a pinch into 2026. Still, nonetheless, the proverbial bottom line, if you look at total cash flows generated by our operation, generated by interest income and grants and all that, about 50 cents on the dollar of revenue is being returned in cash to this business. So a healthy looking P&L for 2026. We will talk about the spending coming up in just a slide or so. All right, page 13, the graphic view, overview of the revenue for next year. The left side comprehends total revenues. If you look just to the far left, there's our operating revenue, $726 million that we've talked about. On top of that is non-operating revenue, which is really composed of grant and that interest income that I mentioned before. Round numbers, the grant receipts about $40 million next year, and interest income, round numbers, about $30 million. To the right, then, breaking that into the various portfolio elements, if you will, of our total revenue, container about 76% of total. It's bigger if you just look at the operating of $726 million. It's about 85% of our revenue comes from container. Multi-purpose facilities, that's largely the turning basin, as well as the operating lease facility, other non-operating, et cetera. So just a view of where the revenue comes from for the Port Authority. Slide 14 then bridges from the 2025 operating revenue to the 2026 expected, 693 and 726. What you have along the right side is a bridge or a walk from this year to next. You can see again the bulk of the growth for 2026 coming from the container line, about a 5% increase in container revenues, split, if you will, between cargo driven and tariff impact from those increases that Ryan will present separately. Turning back to that 6%, again, I mentioned those cargoes quite strong expected. Actually, we're seeing that here late this year and expect that to continue into 2026. And then some others, pipelines coming in next year, DMA tipping fees expected, et cetera, for the last $1 million, making up that $33 million increase. Next page, 15, I believe. It's very busy. I'm sorry if you'll just look at the two pictures. I think no one will be hurt. The left side speaks to total expenses. So now if you see along the left, this is a combination. Obviously, there are operating expenses. Think of that as large than the general operating expenses. The biggest piece, of course, $421 million. G&A, you may remember I mentioned $9 million a few minutes ago, G&A spend, and then non-operating expenses. That's largely the interest expense on the revenue debt outstanding. It's about $46 million a year that we pay in interest expense. If you look to the right side, I won't take you through all slices of the pie. Again, the large section in blue represents people-related costs. 50% of our costs, as I mentioned earlier, split between ILA and PHA employees, both growing nicely as it relates to volumes, primarily the contract ILA, labor increases, et cetera, et cetera. If you move just to the left, you see depreciation, the orange slides. It looks orange from here. The orange slice of the pie, about 23% of our expenses in the P&L. You drop down to the lower, more pumpkin and spice colored number there. Terminal
asset.
The point is, if you look at all the between people and the assets, and then the maintenance of assets, including out the infrastructure, that's 85% of our expense total. Those things together, people and equipment, and taking care of that equipment really concerns most of the pie. Okay, now we're going to do the next slide. It's again evident with revenue bridge between operating expense movement, and then the next page will be the G&A expense movement. The operating expenses on page 16, again, you see growing from $390 million to $421. From 25 to 26, and then the walk on the right. Again, depreciation making up the bulk of the increase from an operating expense perspective into 2026. I mentioned Wharf 7, which comes online. That may even be February. I shouldn't have stepped into that. Who knows? Could tell us when Wharf 7 comes up. And then Wharf 4 and 5 at Barber's Cut, as well as the cranes that are incoming in the first quarter of the year. PHA salaries and benefits, again, replacement headcounts, so the performance merit is in here. The healthcare cost increases, as you may remember from a prior meeting, are also baked into that number. ILA is driven, of course, by the volume growth, and a significant number of, this is what I was going to ask you, Ryan, a significant number of ILA FTE, around 700 or so. ILA FTE represented those numbers, so growing nicely into 2026. Maintenance and capacity support, I mentioned taking care of this heavy capital industry with a variety of crane demolitions, road, all sorts of maintenance, dredge material disposal area, EMDA maintenance, software related maintenance, et cetera, et cetera. Last bullet on that particular walk associated with Houston Ship Channel responsibilities and strategic initiatives as we look again to invest in the future here. General Channel Services, that's engineering and similar consulting work, sediment disposal area planning activities as well, driving about $2 million of incremental spend in 2026. Page 17, my second apology tour slide. It's very busy, but we really thought it was important to be transparent on the change in spend, certainly as it relates to G&A and next year. So we're beginning easy on the left, which is $72 million of spend expected for 2025, growing to $90 million in 2026. The top half on the right then goes a detailed walk of the elements of the $18 million of growth, 72 up to 90. The biggest one, much like operations, is depreciation for next year, just under $4 million. This is driven by the go-live of Workday in January. So we'll begin depreciating that system in January, as well as we'll begin occupying the new administration building in January. So both of those carving ahead in depreciation. salaries and benefits, of course, a combination of replacement and new headcount that we'll talk about in a couple of slides, as well as I mentioned the performance merit increases in there, as well as healthcare cost increases, et cetera, et cetera. That driving about 3.7. Software maintenance and licensing, there's one particular element in here where a vendor has moved out of their purchase price for IT assets. They've moved the maintenance cost out of that, and we expense that now. So that's a little over $1 million. It's costing us, if you will, as compared from 25 to 26. I'm assuming they decided to make more margin if that was pulled out separately. The data terminal strategy, just as it reads, year one of the two-year effort here as we pre-plan the next container terminal. Grant-funded clean ports program, I believe Sanders mentioned that as well, includes things such as the climate action plan and equipment conversion and other very important environmental projects. Economic development and community support, in general, that was approved within the P&D budget back in September. The big item within the two is, of course, the addition of $1 million for Anchored in Action. There's also a number, as you know, a number of community outreach programs, including for that next container terminal, et cetera. Capital delivery program, as it says, this is a redesign of our bringing capital projects to fruition. This is from ideation through requesting your approval. So as we look at those processes of justification and progressing a project through to making award, we will be undertaking that in earnest next year. Continuous improvement, of course, is what that represents. And then all other is a handful of cats and dogs. So that tells you the $18 million. Now, what makes it extra busy is the lower right, where we just tried to summarize that in the three lines to say that $18 million really driven by these three big categories, strategic and community initiatives. You see the very high-tech green shading there. Call your attention to that, $8 million. Base business costs, again, the depreciation, software maintenance. I mentioned the cats and dogs and $1 million. Just base business cost, cost of doing business, if you will. And then headcount, merit, medical increase, all those items rolling into 3.7. So you can see strategic community initiatives, maybe half of the increase in G&A, then base business and headcount growth, kind of the other half. The headcount growth is also tied to strategic initiatives as we, again, intend to fund these important things with headcount and with outside dollars to make progress on some very important projects coming at us in 2026. So that is the look at G&A. Again, that spending up about $18 million. Slide 18 is just a reminder that the promotion and development fund budget that was approved in September is comprehended in all the numbers that you've just seen. So no need to go through that afresh, but the numbers are unchanged and as of in September. Okay, slide 20, I mentioned the change in headcount that we are proposing for 2026. You can see in the bars on the left in the middle, the 831, that's current seat utilization, which is a nice way to say that. 831 on board as of September 30 with 59 open recs. Now cast your eyes to the right side where we go a little bit more detail. We see the 831 as of September 30th. Open approved positions at 59. That number has already changed a bit as we are leaving Carlicia and we are making good progress on filling these positions. We're now left with a couple of 24 positions and a handful of 25 positions that were opened, and then a number of replacements, largely maintenance headcount, but added across the enterprise in total. We're asking your approval for 30 new headcount in 2026. You see the rough breakdown in the box to the right. This is the executive bench. This is our six positions held by Charlie and the executive leadership team that as we get into the year, we have names and positions identified that as business can condition to hold and improve as we see strategic initiatives that need to be funded, and the needs are justified, then these requisitions will be distributed to divisions to execute throughout the country. And then you see a laundry list from infrastructure, et cetera, et cetera. There are, and it's big picture, there are 24 GNA headcount this year and only 6 new in operations, which includes fire and some infrastructure asset management headcount. And that is, you know, in the past, of course, we've probably been heavy on the operations side, and now we're catching up a bit on the GNA side, again, to fund strategic initiatives and fund accomplishment of some of the continuous improvement to the pipeline. All right, slide 22, changing to capital now. First view of the pie chart on the left.
Is there any questions? If you have any questions, just interrupt them.
On these new positions, in slide 22, is there 30? Is this, you're doing some searches for some of these?
We will always seek to do two things. One, to have staff wrapped and prepared for advancement, if we're able. And then we also seek external the best that we can. And depending on the level of the value of the job, depends if there is a search or not. I would tell you most of them is done by our internal HR group and their talent management acquisition group. It really has improved in the last year. They're doing very well. But we do have some, we jokingly call them unicorns, really hard spots to fill that you got to look around, and we do use the recruitment and executive search firms for that. Just one comment on the bench, and I think Tim hit it. If we took all of the staff requests for what they think they need as resources to hit goals and objectives, it's a very big number. And what we've done out of the 30 is we've said, here's the ones that are so clearly justified, squeeze worth the juice, adding value, these are done. Out of the rest, it was a pretty big number. We decided out of all of those, we're going to hold 6 spots to see which, they weren't yet ready, which will develop in the year, and then we will reprioritize those 6 spots from the executive team to fill those roles and change needs as projects develop, as opportunities develop. Jessica, I don't remember the exact number, 15, 17, something like that, requests from staff for headcount, and we're balancing the machine. We can only go so far within the capacity we have, but it's really driven towards resourcing responsibilities to make them real versus having responsibilities we can't do because we don't have the people to get. I hope a little longer than you wanted. I did a little soliloquy on there intentionally, so thank you for the question.
You're not giving everybody everything.
Oh, no. We couldn't. There's a lot of desire, a lot of need. It's about balancing the overall machine, you know, right? Getting the cylinder and the sleeve and the carburetor and the fuel tank, everything lining and matching the maximum output of the organization for the value of creating jobs. The right way.
And you're spot on. It was 16. So you said
okay. 16.
And you need to keep up with the market.
But I do.
You can't overlook that.
Yep. It's part of it.
Very good. Thank you. I'll move on. Thank you.
Well, Jim, one last thing. I do see a few customers in here. This GNA is about preparing for the future with a focus on lowering costs, raising service, and lowering risk, which creates better value in the supply chain. This is about investing and being prepared for the future to continue to deliver excellence, continue the fast trajectory of growth and opportunity, serving our customers. It's not about bureaucracy. It's not about the staff getting bigger. Enormous thought and effort given into each thing to make sure it contributes to that focus the right way, be it community, be it environment, be it work crane production, being it having better dredging programs, all the things that support the program and the maritime economy for the whole port. So I'm really pleased with the effort of the staff of where we got to. Definitely did a little differently this year.
Well done. Very good. Thank you, sir. Okay, we will turn to capital and liquidity. Page 22 is an overview of the capital plan for 2026. And just under half, that 47% was labeled as strategic. That's new capacity, new capital we're putting in. Bayport Wharf 1, you see on the right, as well as Bayport Southern Access Road. There are some tariff plans in here on ship to shore cranes, how that ultimately lands, and making sure that's covered. Recapitalization largely, you're talking about Barber's Cut and Turning Basin Terminals. Barber's Cut, we will ask your approval to award awards 5 and 6, and the ship to shore cranes much later in the year in 26. Manchester Wharf 2 is also up for approval award. Sometime in 2026 as well. Project 11, $35 million. That's our local cost share portion. I will be clear on this, which is we may well be able to take advantage of the work-in-kind credits that we have earned thus far with the Corps. This is sort of worst case, if you will, if it is based on our own cash, but I think that number will be lower when it's time for award. Channel maintenance, $34 million. Those are dredge, maintenance dredge, PHA docks. And then remaining projects between TNT contingency maintenance. Order. I'll remind you again, all of these over, each project over 100 grand will come before you for your approval.
Why would maintenance be in capital and not in operating?
Not an expense.
Not an expense.
Well, these are long assets.
It's not like just your amateur. It's not annual maintenance required.
Correct. Yeah, it's maintenance equipment. Thank you, Rick. I should clarify.
Yeah, you appreciate that.
Over 15 years.
Got it. Okay.
If the if we somehow get the tariffs eliminated, is that money going to be spent on other projects, or is it just going to not be spent?
It will be back into the coffers to be spent on future projects. As we
so there's no designation.
Correct.
Per se.
That's correct.
So we will be limited by the boundaries of the capital and the operating budgets voted on by the board for the 1 year. And if there's a new need that comes outside of that and we have the wherewithal to do, there would be a new budget amendment made by the board. That's very rare. We try to forecast as much optimism as we can, but it could, but it's not in the plan.
So same way that you say you get more money to spend and you'll come back to us and say,
well, yeah, we, this is the boundary. How we move around within the boundary is we have a little bit of flexibility to what makes sense. We report those to you, but to go above or to spend more than the limits here would require Port Commission Act and actions from the budget.
Well, I knew that, but I guess,
yeah.
Keep our fingers crossed.
I don't think that's happened in 20 years.
I have not seen it happen. But I would love to have the opportunity and the ability to defeat it, but it's... Yeah. We're pretty aggressive in our capital planning and growth because we've been growing so fast for so long. It's hard to grow much faster than we are because all of the associated issues. I'll just tell you today, I'm leaving to go up to meet with the head of TxDOT about roadway capacity because our growth has hammered their roadway capacity, which is a critical link in our supply chain. And if we grow much more, it's worse. So you got to balance the entire package.
I can save you a trip. They don't have any money.
Well, we'll talk offline. That's
where do they put it?
It's that priority. That's right.
All right. This is Ben Carlos. You got trouble with Unique?
Yeah.
Slide 23 just gives a bit of detail on the right side, right column, 2026 budget. You again see the subtotal of 534 of our operating capital, $35 million for Project 11, total of 569. We'll talk a little bit more detail about Bayport, Barber's Cut. The channel development number, again, is maintenance dredge at Port Authority Docks. Multi-purpose facilities, we'll look at that in detail. There's your maintenance equipment at $10.6 million. Real estate is largely there, very opportunistic, advised by our real estate team. Port security, there's several things in there, including the Barber's Cut Fire Station, a fire engine for Turning Basin, as well as our third fire boat itself. All those will receive, at least the latter two will receive project justification. We'll bring those to you for your approval. IT, as you know, we continue to capitalize next generation golfs in 2026. We'll go live with Workday and we'll begin working on Tririga and larger related to asset management and projects as well. So continue to capitalize money there. Other, again, as you see, a host of cats and dogs, including the Sam Houston boat locations included in that number.
Well, the project 11, but the quarter is going to pick up.
That cost share.
This is our share.
Our share of the cost.
Right. Yeah. These are core led projects in our local cost share portion.
But we may save money if they give us credit for working kind.
That's correct.
All of it or what?
Have you ever read it?
Not money, credit.
Credit.
When we have some almost monopoly money sitting there that we have actually cashed in on many projects where the federal government paid the price and we've reduced our credit. I have a report in my office that tells the exact balance of that. Lori's team does a great job keeping up, very closely accounted. But up in the Turning Basin, as it sits today, the project is 100% federally funded. And if they don't have enough money, we'll have to issue cash. And to be fully funded, what it means is we're paying credit for the 25% that we would normally have to pay. So we've hedged it because there's uncertainty until the Corps through design. We really know what they're doing and where stuff is going. We'll get final accounting. And then if we can get the federal funds, all credit will be used. If we don't get all the federal funds, we'll have to supplement cash. This is the cash risk exposure we believe we have.
This is like our worst case scenario, I guess.
The most likely worst case scenario versus, you know, rates triple or anything.
Oh, right. Yeah.
That's it. All right, go ahead. Okay, very good. Okay, a few maps to look from slide 24. This is the Bayport terminal. You see the circle there on Wharf 1, which we anticipate bringing to you sometime in the fourth quarter. Is the largest asset. You see that at $165 million budgeted today. Bayport Southern Access Road, of course, doesn't make the map. We can show you where that is if you'd like to know. The tariff that we reserved at 25% on four of the cranes that come in, arguably January, I think, Paulo?
By mid-January.
And a placeholder for those tariffs and then others. The Bayport South ILA parking lot, that number stands out a bit, but recognize that this, you know, involves the infrastructure as if this could be a container yard in the future. So there's electrical and drainage, et cetera, and a high grade, obviously, of concrete. So it's not just an asphalt parking lot. This is an area that could be used for containers one day. Barber's Cut, a little bit busier, but nonetheless, see Wharf 5 and 6 and the Seaboard Sport Building there to be awarded, I believe in April, that's about $100 million. The cranes will be awarded for that that wharf at the end of the year. Here's the other four cranes coming in to Wharf 4 and 5 this year, so a placeholder for NHF liability there. Slide 26, a view of the Turning Basin. I know that you are here. It's very helpful to the audience. I'll call attention first to the blue boxes, the various city docks. A lot of that work required, if you will, to shore up, no pun intended, shore up those wharves in anticipation of Project 11 as the deepening project goes to its terminus behind us here. So continue to invest in those very important public facilities. The orange there, Manchester, again, Wharf 2, expected to come forward out of March, I believe, for your consideration and award. Okay. Home stretch here on liquidity. So page 27 in your deck, starting top left, available cash today, just over $700 million. That excludes reserves and PO balances and contingencies, self-insurance funds, et cetera. So 734, moving to the center, you see we are projecting to end with available $560 million in 2026, and then just to the right, $538 million cash balances at the end of 2027. You see the section beneath that for Project 11, I believe sometime in 2028. Yeah, there it is in the blue box. We'll conclude our funding of Project 11 just outside of the horizon. So that's cap balance. If you go to page 28, award capacity, again, the capacity for this commission to award new projects is what this represents. And you can see really the gray column in the middle for 2026, the $300 million. This is one of four credit facilities we have. The point is that we will award against that particular commercial paper program in 2026. We will not draw any cash against that, but simply award against it. It's sort of a letter of credit to assure that we have that. And you get the difference there. We award $165 million wharf. Of course, it won't pay out for 3 to 5 years. So this is your ability to have room to award a capital project in total. Good position here and use of those credit facilities. Summary, certainly take any questions at any point. Looks very stable into next year. All assumptions considered. Marginal growth in cargoes continued what I believe to be, of course, operational excellence. Growth rates increased a pinch on industry and market signals, and fairly stable steel volumes into next year. Capital plan continued to provide growth opportunities for customers and jobs and local regional prosperity. And proverbial bottom line of cash, liquidity position found. Cash positions favorable given these assumptions. With that, I will gladly answer any questions, and if not, ask Chairman for a vote on the 2026 budget.
Any other questions? Not, there's a motion.
So moved.
Second.
Okay. All papers say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Thank you very much. We now spend just a few minutes in review of the 5-year plan. The 5-year plan does not require your approval. It is just simply your review acknowledgement of the 5-year. Slide 32 is a graphic illustration. You can see the gray bar growing around 5% on an annual basis, supported by fairly modest growth in container units and general cargoes. It all rounds to 5. It's plus or minus 5% through the time. The green bar, as you might expect, represents the net operating cash flow generation through the same horizon, growing up to $446 million. I will say there is a lot of work behind this and a host of assumptions to get there, but because it's for review, we won't take you through the muck and the mire that it takes to get here. But a solid outlook, if not conservative, for your plan. By the time we get to 2030, you're looking at around 5 million TEUs. Now, it reminds you that for 2026, we are in the 4.4 million range. Next slide, 33, again, an overview of capital and liquidity. The blue bars, again, representing the capital rewards that we project. You see the 534 and the 35 of Project 12 awards. Next year, 2027, which the event live is only one container. I believe it's CY9. I've just went blank on what that is. I believe it's CY9 in 2027. 28 and 29 of interest are projections as we begin to expand into Bayport East. That's the east end with Wharf 8, Turning Basin, Breakwater, some projects coming at us in the late 20s, et cetera, et cetera. Through time. Cash position again through 2030. See, we'll start at the bottom, which is the pay down ultimately of Project 11 bond proceeds. And then moving up to PHD operating again, ending 2030 in the $400 million range. I'll again remind you, as we get into the early to mid 2030s and begin funding the next container terminal and Project 12, we begin to see the need for external financing. And the last slide, I promise, 35 is again the award capacity. Once we get past the 2026 leverage of that credit facility, we'll be in a good position to ensure you have that capacity toward And with that, thank you. I would like to acknowledge the financial planning. As I said before, they do all the real work. I just have to talk about it. David Jock now, the financial planning director. That's real labor on there. Well, thank you. That's all I had.
Any other questions or comments?
What's our current theft exposure that's out there
for the war crimes?
Yeah. In total.
And I will just caution, it is generally changing every week, and mm-hmm. different things are happening. Right now, there's a Supreme Court case on two of the potential tariff exposures we have. As of this moment, and this is different than it was 2 weeks ago, we're actually at 45% current tariff exposure on the 8 cranes that have been ordered, 45%. That breaks down to 10% for the fentanyl tariff with China, 10% for Liberation Day for China, 25% the Biden-era wharf crane tariff, who were the only port being hit with. So you add those all up to 45%. Our team is working very, very hard on the Biden 25%. Just in fact, we're the only ones paying in the country. Doesn't seem quite fair. That came in after we bought the crane, not before we bought the crane. And we're making good headway, but that's still there. And the other two are totally subject to the Supreme Court and the actions of the administration. So
what does that translate to dollar?
45% of 100.
Around 60. Right now, $30 million in the plan you see for next year. So another $25 million, $30 million.
We're budgeting only $29 million plan, but it'd be 60. At one point, it was 300.
Well, and the complexity rises because, as Tim mentioned, next year we're planning to meet market demand, start on the development of Dock 1, which is a bigger dock at Bayport. It's just the normal dock, then all the way to Dock 7, so it's about an extra 300-400 feet long. That dock has to have wharf cranes to be of value, and the wharf crane challenge and exposure is very high. The tariffs on new cranes that weren't previously bought, they're well above 179% right now, and we don't know what's going to happen. But we have trips to D.C., we're working the issue, and the team is well aware we will be holding the decision on Dock 1 to understand brain risk and exposure. Let's converse with the board about it, make sure we're aligned and have guidance, and then we'll do those together. Wharf cranes will take longer from the other delivery, most likely, the other manufacturers, as they're getting overwhelmed in capacity. And we just have to time, fill the game, negotiate to the best dance, and then make the wisest decision we can.
So I know this is not a smart question, because I know there's no way to determine the increase of cargo for the future, not knowing what the tariffs are. Because that's hurting a lot of our cargo movements right now.
Well, so the overall port is in the federal stats are ending in June because of the government shutdown. There's no new data since June. At the end of July, the overall port's down 6.77. And we're up to date
6%.
6%, which is bled into the overall port. And what's happening, the overall imports, generally to the private port, the petrochemical complex are way down. Exports are actually they're flat for over the overall port. But for us, and you know, our exports are a lot of them are hydrocarbons and boxes, plastic pellets and products. We're weathering this better than any other port. We're up 6% year to date. Now, if you look at the last 10 years, our average compounded annual growth rate is 6.4%. And don't forget, we are the fastest growing port in the nation 10 years in a row, 2 times faster than number 2, and 4 times faster than the other top 10 container ports. So, Clyde, what I'll tell you, the resiliency of Texas, this community, our industries, has been astounding. It's really hard to know how long does it last or how does it shift. I will tell you, it's very clear other parts of the country are having much more dramatic impact on their cargo line. But our exports are still being sold, and they're driving and helping off imports come in. So we're fairly balanced.
I think the growth rate, when you think about the last 10 years and think about the next 10 years, it really depends on the overall Texas growth rate and the overall regional growth rate, right? If you go 10 years ago and you look at our population base just in our region, it's grown 100 to 110,000 people per year, every single year, right? And that's not stopped. That's going forward. The question ultimately will be, what is the normalized growth rate for the region over the next 10 years? I don't think enough of us know that, you know, today. Obviously, the changes today in terms of growth of people moving to Texas have not really changed domestically. Domestic migration continues to be pretty strong. The real wild card is immigration, because we are a big immigrant state, and what happens to immigration in terms of that component, when you think about population growth and the domestic immigration, it's going to be natural birth versus death, and we have actually a positive number on that, which a lot of other places have negative on natural growth in population, and then the third component being, you know, immigration. And our national, international immigration is really strong. And primarily, when you think about that, it's petrochemical driven, right? People come here because we're the energy capital of the world, basically, and they come here because that's where they work and can get jobs. So it'll be interesting to see how it all plays. But once we get through this kind of complicated period, I think you're going to get back to a more normalized growth scenario, because all the things that drive Texas growth are still in place. Yeah. Pro-business environment, you know, all the low cost of living, all the things that drive growth in states like Texas are in place, and they're not in place in other places. That's why you have this domestic immigration. So if we our projected to go another 1 million people in the next 10 years, then we need to keep making these investments, because there's going to be more stuff those people need to use when they
here. The trade goes beyond Texas, which is sort of, okay. I mean, so it is, are other competitor ports seeing the same 5%? Are we taking their market share?
No. So our market is changing at an extraordinary rate, and there's a reason. And my simple belief is the commercialization of fracking by George Mitchell, bringing in low-cost feedstock to the chemical and the energy industry. And by the way, what is fascinating to me is a huge number of our manufacturing complex partners have a lot of excess capacity built in the system that's not yet utilized. So they have a lot, the fixed cost is generally covered going forward. It'll just be their variable cost to use those assets to do more. That by themselves make them so effective internationally in the market that they believe likely will be best value, which drives a lot of the business. But what I would caution is, we have thousands of different supply chains, and every supply chain, every commodity, every market is different. We're speaking in very large generalities, but in our container market, we serve Texas. We're 99% by truck. We're the only port in the nation this way. Almost every other container port is shuttling cargo into the middle of the country. We don't. Our cargo stays here. It's the best thing for our purpose of creating jobs in our region in Texas and in the nation, and the priority. And the jobs we're creating are staying in Texas, but we get the economic value of both sides of the coin. We have the maritime commerce and we have the distribution commerce. So it has the highest job multiplier out of any port out there per unit that we handle. Where, again, if you look at the West Coast or the East Coast, let's say 40% or 30% goes to the middle of the country. The middle of the country gets that economic development off that cargo, or for us, it all stays here. But if we switch to oils or liquids or energy or all the other products, we service the whole country in a critical fashion. So I'm sorry for the long-winded.
No, there's no question about that. I think we are unique in that way, right, in that imports that are coming in are servicing the growth of the region, primarily our region, right, as opposed to when a container comes into L.A. or Long Beach and it gets put on a train and it gets shipped to Dallas or Chicago, then that economic benefit of that, of what's inside that box, is being exported from California to those other markets, and then that product, whatever it is then being improved or distributed to the local market there, and that's where that activity happens, right? We're very different than that. We don't just send a box to Chicago. We send a box to Haiti or to Austin or somewhere else, and then the activity that is generated in that box, whether it be a part for manufacturing or whether it be a CD or something that somebody uses, is then used in the marketplace, which is, to his point, Charlie's point, it's an economic it's a job multiplier. So one box creates a whole lot more jobs here than it does in California. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the growth curve is really a function of how many products do we consume regionally and in Texas. So that's the difference that we have from a lot of ports, because they do, you know, that towards the middle of the country as opposed to just the region, right? Yeah, there's a conduit for that transfer. Now they still do fine, and it's a good thing for them to have that business, but that's not our business. Our business is not sending boxes to Chicago or Dallas, and it's about taking care of the local folks. And as long as we keep growing, and then the port's going to keep growing, that's why we'll probably, you know, double the growth of the other major ports, because their regions aren't growing like ours.
That brings us to confirm, you know, as we look at 2026, just to reiterate the numbers, where Texas gross state product, right, the equivalent, is just under 3%, whereas the U.S. is expected to grow just under 2%. So just to your point of the Texas economy.
Just to put a point on it, too, when you think about jobs, so the state of California is barely at where they were job-wise in 2019. So San Francisco and L.A. have not added back the jobs they lost during COVID. And we have had millions of jobs, right? And that's just the regional aspects of why the Texas miracle is happening the way it is that we're a low-cost provider, you know, high quality of life, lots of young people, employable, and we grow. And in those markets, they don't, for their reasons.
Okay,
but I think it's really important to recognize that keep the growth going, keep the Houston region port miracle happening. We have to invest in the future because we know there's always coming.
Right.
If we don't invest in the future, and all of a sudden you have instead of capacity in 2030, you have 5 million TEUs and we have 4.5 million TEUs, and what happens is that excess 500,000 TEUs can go somewhere else, or it's going to be brought in from somewhere in a more expensive way. So we have to continue to do that. So
Charlie's also practicing through his talk with TxDOT.
Yeah. So we need to move the trucks. All right. Any other questions or comments on the plan? All right. So let's move next to Brian, I think.
Yep. Operations.
Go ahead. Brian.
Thank you, Chairman. Good morning, Commissioners. Try to add on the very well-stated comments about the current state of our business with a few updates. Today on the agenda, we have a recommendation for our 2026 rate increases that were included in Tim's remarks. Like I said, first few updates. Good news, as we've mentioned before, total tonnage at our public facilities up overall 6%. We've handled over 46 million tons. Again, like you mentioned, simply a remarkable feat given the current market conditions. Our multi-purpose facilities kind of slipped a little bit for the month, but remain up over the year, just over 3%. Steel remained flat with last month's update, holding at down 2%. Dry bulk growth slowed a little in October, but remains up nearly 7%. Liquid bulk actually had an increase slightly for the month, but remains down at about 5%. Break bulk, on the other hand, showed a significant rebound in tonnage for the month, up over 21%, with Northside Training Basin and Jacinto Port performing higher than what we had forecasted. Container volumes, surprisingly, surged for the month compared to September and last year, and we're now up 5.6% in loaded TEU and nearly 6% in total TEU. The earlier comment, exports continue to drive our growth, now up over 9% for the year. Still a lot of doubt in the market, especially on the import side, like you were discussing momentarily ago. But Houston continues to prove it's resilient in the market. Back to the agenda. The recommendation in front of you is for a general rate increase of 2.7% for Tariff 8 and 4.49% for Tariffs 14 and 15. The 2.7% is based on July CPI. The container terminals recommendation is to include an additional uplift to offset the increasing labor rates, consistent with the last approach. We're also recommending that harbor and security fees at the container terminals are excluded from that uplift and maintain the consistent 2.7% increase. So with that, happy to answer any questions you may have. Otherwise, request your approval.
Okay, any questions or comments? If not, all in favor say aye.
Thank you, sir.
Lori, you're up next.
Good morning.
Morning.
Panel, this actually has one item today for your consideration. It's a cost share agreement with the Army Corps Galveston District to initiate the navigation feasibility study for Project 12, the next and 12th Houston Ship Channel Improvement Project, in an amount not to exceed $49,999. As a bit of background, the Water Resource Development Act of 2024 authorized this feasibility study for P12, and the port intends to serve as the sole non-federal sponsor of the study, which will be cost shared with the Army Corps in three specific project phases. So phase one is what we're being considered today. It's for the initial kickoff of the feasibility study, cost share, development of the agreement, the project management plan, and initiation of the scoping. Phase two is complete development of a study scope, and phase three is complete the feasibility study in form of a chief's report. Staff would bring further study commitments, i.e. phase two and three, and that cost is dependent on project size and complexity, and as we work through the scope, we'll work through all those details, and we'll bring that to the Board Commission for future consideration as the work proceeds. So with that, I respectfully ask for your approval of item H1.
So moved. Any questions or comments? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. That's Lori.
Thank you.
I'd just like to make one quick comment in support of Lori, just for clarity of the team. So the process takes a long time to get through. There's an authorized project that makes sense. It's been balanced with all of the pros and the cons of the additional development. It is likely that this process will not begin construction for up to 10 years for a whole host of reasons for the complexity of Project 12. What's important about Project 12, it is also being designed to be aligned with the Coastal Protection Program that the state is working on with the federal government for our storm surge, our hurricane protection for this region. So it's really about aligning the two projects. It meets our present views on market demand for it, being able to pay for it in a business sense where there's a return on invested capital. But this is not a project for tomorrow. This is about right now planning and scoping and seeing what everything should be. And it is also being planned for like a project with multiple construction phases that can last out and start bringing benefits, I'd say 15 years, but could possibly meet market demand for 20 to 30 years more. So 13 is even further away, but just for clarity, this, again, we're very likely 10 years away for maximal dollars unless we decide to self-fund and do this again. This project, by the way, is much bigger than Project 11. Project 11 was from the Texas City Y up. This is the Texas City, or the Project 11, the entire footprint of Texas City facilities, the entire footprint of Galveston facilities, the entrance channel way out into the Gulf of Mexico into federal waters beyond the state boundaries. And if Cedar Port develops, it would also be part of this program. So it's a much bigger, and it's more similar to Project 10, will be multi-functional with all the other ports participating.
Interesting. Okay. All right, so next item is our executive session. So why don't we take a quick break, and then we'll do the executive session.
Now 10:54 a.m. The Port Commission of the Port of Easton, already of Howard County, Texas, will now convene in a closed meeting as permitted by Texas Open Meetings Act and Government Code. Conduct a consultation with attorneys, including consultations regarding 33 U.S.C. A5B and 2236 and Water Code Chapter 60, Subchapter O, and deliberate regarding real estate, including disposition of Galveston Bay vicinity property, economic development, negotiations for incentives, employment, evaluation of public employees, and security-related matters. Court Commission will reconvene in public session after the closed session is
no.